Hey, everybody. Good evening. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Good answer. Okay. We have no emergency or priority traffic. I guess our next question is to decide how we run this net. Now, we run this net a little differently than other nets that Barra has, and probably other clubs as well. It's a dialogue. It's a discussion among any radio amateur who wants to participate, as long as they can transmit in the amateur radio 2-meter band in the United States of America. The game plan here is to discuss virtually anything in ham radio, electronics, telecommunications, or things that depend on those things. So feel free to talk about pretty much whatever on your mind. You have a lot of fun with it. So we also check in a little differently here too. We check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether or not we have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. I want to emphasize that we encourage stations to check in even if they don't have a question or a comment. It really does help us engage in a dialogue if we know who the audience is. So please do give us that consideration and feel free to check in to the net. You do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. You need to have an amateur radio license, as I said before, to transmit the amateur radio 2-meter band in the United States. Alrighty, having said all that fun stuff, why don't we get down to the business? Oops, my phone is ringing. Stand by. Alrighty, with that little bit of personal attention taken care of, thank you very much for that little discretion. Let's call the Alpha stations. Any stations whose call sign begin with the letter Alpha, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Was there an Alpha station? All right, perhaps not. All right. Let's start with the whiskey stations. It's been a while since we started the whiskey stations. I think last week we started with kilos of one flavor or another. So the whiskey stations, please come with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
W2JEK, Don with a comment.
Good evening, Don with a comment. Good to hear you. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
WE2R, Charlie, no comments or questions.
Hi, Charlie. Good evening to you as well. Any other whiskey stations? Alrighty. How about our ever-popular November stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
This is
2BKZ. My name is Gary. I'll just be listening.
Wow, got two. N2BKZ, Gary, welcome aboard. I heard Jim in there, but I don't know what Jim's status is. NS2K, go ahead.
Yeah, NS2K, no question at this point.
Okay, I'm just kind of curious how the NAQP went, by the way. I am fishing for that answer. I think it was last weekend, if I remember. All right, any other November stations? All right, moving that right along. How about the ever-popular Kilo 2 stations?
Or just listening.
Okay, that's sort of like Kilo 2. Hi, Robert. Alrighty. Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilo 2s?
This is K2ZO. No questions or comments at this time.
Good evening, Jim. All right. Any other Kilo 2s?
2 AMI. You copied me the first time, Gordon.
No, actually, it was a three-way double. This time it was only a two-way double. Tony, what's your pleasure?
Questions, no comments. Just standing by.
And who was the station who just doubled with you?
K2DSL, David, with a comment.
Good evening, David. All right, K2DSL is aboard with a comment. Any other Kilo 2s, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, let's move to the rest of the kilos, any and all kilos.
This is KC2TBD, no questions.
KC2TBD, I got you, with no questions. There's a station who's operating on simplex on the output. I'm going to ask, let's let him get his call in. So everybody let the repeater drop and let this fellow get in. Who is this station? Okay. Anybody who's trying to get into the repeater, you need to have an offset of minus 600 kilohertz, and you need to have a tone, or a PL, if you will, a tone of 141.3. That's a decimal 141.3, pardon me. So let's try. We'll drag our feet to that. Any other kilo stations of any flavor?
K2BAR, this is Stuart, KC2FQP, and a question.
Hi, Stuart. We got you with a question. Very good. Let's see. Any other kilos? Any other stations, late check-ins, any qualifying type, whatever, W2, probably K2BAR. Alrighty, well, let's go to our first comment of the evening. That'd be from Don, W2JEK. Go right ahead, Mr. Don, K2BAR.
K2BAR, W2JEK, good evening, everybody. I did want to mention that tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the Barra VE team will be holding a session at the Westwood Regional High School at 7 p.m. in classroom 123. In case anybody should be interested, we'll be having a good crew of VEs there. With that, back to net, I will, before I presume you want information on the NAQ party, I'll come back. I was in that too, so maybe you want to discuss that later. Back to net, W2JEK.
I want to get to the question that might be out there first, but sure. Alrighty, let's see. That's a good reminder about the test session. Very, very good reminder. I'm glad we're getting ready for that. That's loads of fun to see new hams get licensed. Alrighty. Stuart, I'm going to take your question at this point. So, back to you. KC2SQP, K2BAR.
BAR, this is KC2SQP. The question is, someone explain how microfarads are in relationship to a capacitor, please.
How a microfarad relates to a capacitor?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well, that's actually pretty straightforward. In simple terms, a microfarad is a unit of capacitance. And a capacitor is what gives you that, obviously. So that might be one way to consider it. You might want to think about that. Now, a farad is a unit of stored charge, if you will. Or is it, actually? No, actually, it's not. That's a coulomb. Now my brain is a little slow, but let's just say a farad is a lot of energy. So while I think about it, before I, since I've introduced the potential confusion, I'm going to, you know, let's see. I'm going to go to the gyms. First, we'll go to NS2K for a change, just to mix it up. Mr. Jim, what is the relationship between a farad and a coulomb? And this coulomb is stored charge, so what actually is capacitance?
NS2K. How to explain it in semi-normal terms here. I don't know. Capacitor is normally measured in two basic terms, and there are lots of other terms too, but you'll have the value in capacitance in usually microfarads or picofarads, and the other measure is the rated voltage, and obviously both parameters need to be met in any case in a given circuit. Otherwise, if it's over voltage, it's liable to blow up. And if it doesn't have enough capacitance or has too much capacitance, it won't behave correctly in the circuit. Generally, it's the ability of a device, the capacitance is the ability of a device to resist the change in voltage across its terminals. It will either give out or absorb considerable amount of current in order to resist that voltage change, just the opposite of what an inductor does. Anyway, is that a little bit of help? NS2K.
Marvelous. Marvelous. Yes. Absolutely. I hear Dr. Tao talking to me now, as it were. Anyway, I was a bit of a joke, went over RC, but anyway. Alrighty, Mr. Jim, K2ZO, you're whack at it.
The farad is the international agreed on measurement of capacitance. Of course, if we look at the circuits that we use, we don't need things in farads, although sometimes for power supplies we might almost do that. So we use and divide it by 1,000, and go even another 1,000 for a nano and pico and things like that. If you wanted to think about it as storage of energy, think about it as a pail of water versus a swimming pool full of water. A microfarad would be the pail of water, and a farad would be the swimming pool. And as far as a coulomb goes, a coulomb is the measure of the quantity of electrical flow over a period of time, kind of like an electric speedometer. That's kind of as simple as I can put it. Back to that, K2ZO.
Yeah. Fair enough. Alrighty. Well, that's good. I hope that helps you a little bit. Before I ask anybody else to chime in, let me just let you comment on what you've heard so far. Then we'll see if anybody else wants to add more to this. KC2SQP, K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is KC2SQP. Well, I want to thank everyone for explaining it to me. I was studying something, and I came up with this, and I asked four people, and I got four different answers, but at least I can understand it better now, and I really want to thank all you guys for coming in and helping me out. Thanks. AccidentNet.
Yeah, one of the things you might want to do is look at what happens to a capacitor that's in series with different resistors. Let's pick one voltage, one standard voltage, and various resistor values, and a capacitance value, and see what happens as you measure the resistance value. What happens? See what happens as you measure for a given resistance value. See what happens if you measure if you change the capacitance, et cetera, et cetera. You might find some interesting characteristics. That's one of the ways to build essentially a time constant. Anyway, let's see who goes next. With this, anybody want to jump in with further comments on capacitance or related subjects? This is KTBAR.
Let me do JEK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, one thing I have to remember, capacitor, in simple terms, would be two conductors separated by a dielectric, a material that is not a conductor. For example, two pieces of tinfoil separated by a piece of wax paper. And that would work as a capacitor in a certain application. However, the voltage rating would not be there. You couldn't use that maybe, say, for 1,000 volts. It might be good for 100 volts, depending on how thick the wax paper was. Then they have other electrolytics, other dielectrics. We have air variable capacitors that are capacitors that have plastics or mylar or mica or whatever is between the between the two conductors. And capacitor is the bigger the larger the area of the plate, what simulates the area of the plate, the greater the capacitor. And so that might be a help to your story. In some cases, they had capacitors that were filled with oil. Matter of fact, even back in the old days of the spark transmitters, they used castor oil as a dielectric. It was better than air, apparently. So what's a thought for you there is just what the thing actually does in most of our circuits. That, with that, I'll send it back to Net, W2JK.
Very good. Yeah, good way to think about it. I used to test oils for their dielectric properties and also for their breakdown voltages. That was exciting. I had very large transformers available to me. Big, huge, basically capacitors. I could charge up to various levels, and then discharge them rather abruptly. But I had to do it in a very, very controlled way. I had to use standardized probes. Their gap had to be very, very carefully monitored and measured, thermally stabilized, et cetera, et cetera. It was interesting. And I had to take, static air readings before I measured and did anything. I often had to take, further readings in the oil or whatever it was that I was testing. It was marvelous. It was neat. Sometimes people would give me, dry, stable things like Teflonish things to go play with. But most of the time it was liquids. They wanted to know, how bad it would be. And my only question when I was playing with this stuff was, what's in it and how badly are my children going to be deformed? In any case, I didn't have anything really nasty to test, thank God. Alrighty, anybody else have comments on the subject? Please call KTBAR.
Good morning. AMI.
Go right ahead, Tony.
You neglected to indicate a reference, and I think if you pick up any of the amateur radio handbooks and look up the word farad, which is in the index in the back, they'll give you an explanation of farad and some of its usefulness of it, the size of it, and so forth. Again, not the same information that was given here, but what you need to know about a farad. So, Stuart, if you get to the club meeting, a clubhouse, pick up an amateur radio handbook and look up farad there. There's very good definitions available. Back to net.
You could also Google it. Good idea, though. Good idea. If you don't have a radio amateur handbook, though, I would recommend Googling it or get some of the other references that might come up from that. Alrighty. Anybody else? Alrighty. Before we go on to our next topic, anybody want to check in, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. K2BAR, this is KC2PYB.
Good evening, Richard. Did you want to talk about something in particular?
Negative, negative, just checking in.
Okie dokie. No problem, well, good to hear you. For the third time today, actually. Anyway. Ah, dear me. Alright, so, we have a comment from Mr. K2DSL. So let's hear what that's about, and then we'll see what else is around. K2BAR, go ahead, Mr. Dave.
K2BAR, K2DSL. This might be a good segue for what you might have wanted to talk to. Anyway, I know that the NAQPCW was last week, last Saturday, and then this Saturday is the phone version of the NAQP. So for all of us on the East Coast, it is from 1 p.m. Eastern Time to 1 a.m. It's a 12-hour window, and you're allowed to operate, assuming you're all operating single, is 10 hours out of those 12 hours. So it's off the regular 10, 15, 20, 40, 80, I think 160 as well, bands. And the exchange is your name and your state. So you just got to be consistent on your name and your state. And the HF band should be hopping on Saturday afternoon. That's my comment. Back to net, K2BAR, K2DSL.
Okay, and are foreign contacts allowed?
Foreign contacts are allowed, but they probably want us more than we want them. Also, North America stations, such as Mexico or whatever else is considered North America, such as Alaska or Hawaii, are multipliers as well. The regular multipliers are the individual states and, I think, 13 Canadian provinces. Back to that.
So states, provinces, the entire country of Mexico, or eight states as well?
Anything in North America. So whatever the states, the provinces, any North America country. Also, D.C. counts as Maryland, and things like Maritime Mobile or other mobiles don't count as multipliers, but you can work them as a QSO. So you really get no points, I don't think. Maybe Don knows differently for a DX station. But if you're calling CQ, the odds are a DX station will call you because they'll be trying to make contact. Back to that.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, I like that. So there are no, there's no benefit to us other than just a QSO to working a foreign station. That's pretty obvious. Alrighty. By the way, I'm wondering if Eleanor Holmes Norton would approve of being considered part of Maryland. which, by the way, for Senate representation, I think should be. I'm here and there, but the District of Columbia, and, you know, let essentially the District of Columbia pick up an extra representative, if you won't even bother doing that. But heaven forbid they have two senators from the state, from the state, if I say that, not District of Columbia. Yikes. Anyway, neither here nor there. We'll get away from that political football. Alrighty. That sounds exciting. And I will be at the Naval Academy. So the 1 o'clock Saturday, 1 p.m. Saturday to 1 p.m. Sunday time frame with a 10-hour operating limit is perfect for us because we have other requirements, and that's going to work well for us, to say the least. A lot of people will be on the air in the afternoon really cooking the band, so that'll be excellent, excellent, excellent. It'll be easy to get a QSO. Alrighty, thank you for that. Mr. Don, did you want to comment on that some more?
Yeah, North American stations plus Hawaii are counted. Hawaii is normally not considered North America. Oh, that's counted. And, they had a list of everything in there that was North American. Panama on North, Mexico, all the little countries in between, and all the islands out in the Caribbean that are part of North America. The ones that are close to South America, of course, are part of South America, don't count as far as that goes. And I was in the CW, and I did work Mexican station. I worked Puerto Rico, among others. The two that I worked, I think, outside of the 48 states.
Okay, that's pretty good. All right, well, it'll be perfect for me anyway this weekend. I'm excited. We've got a bunch of midshipmen who are teaching radio merit badge in the morning and afternoon, and we'll have a good chunk of time in the evening to operate as well, so this is going to be good. I'm just bringing my Pro 3 this year and my 703 Plus and a couple of FM rigs. Kind of made that management decision to make it a little easier to see things and make things happen. But one of the cool things we're going to do is we're going to walk around with a backpack with 40 meters on it or something ridiculous like that. So we'll have somebody romping around with that in a backpack. So that's going to be kind of fun. So we shall see. Alrighty. Any other past experiences from NAQP from anybody else? Or from either Don or David, for that matter, K2BAR.
This is W2JBK.
I got you, Don. Hold on 1 second. Who was the other station?
David again. I just wanted to make sure it's 1 p.m. Saturday, our time, to 1 a.m. So it's just a 12-hour window. You can operate 10, so it doesn't go 24 hours. So you got to operate between 1 p.m. Saturday and 1 a.m. our time Sunday morning, or so don't try to do much on Sunday. Back to that.
Yeah, I misspoke. Thank you. So it's a 12-hour window, not a 24. That's nice. It's civilized. You get up, go to church next morning, and you're good to go. That's good, because Church Rush is going to be where the ham radio station is, and it will be at 7 a.m. An intimate gathering of probably about 500 people. Oh, Lord. Anyway. All right. Very good. Anybody else with comments? Mr. Don, I think you wanted to go.
Yeah, I found it in the book here, rule number 10, rule number 11, and multipliers, it says all U.S. states, including Hawaii and Alaska, 13 provinces, and anything that's North America, North American countries. It says District of Columbia, Kansas, Maryland, non-North American countries, maritime mobiles and aeronautical mobiles do not count as multipliers, but they make for QSO credit. So you get a point, but you can't use it as a multiplier. QSO?
That's what I was figuring. Okay. Very good. I think we're going to have to load up some software. I think I'll load up CT or something tonight and
make sure it's all rocking. Actually, CT's loaded. I just make sure I have the right profile for it, and it's talking to my radio just fine. So I'm not bringing my rig blaster. I'm just going to bring a control cable. I have a serial control cable. Alrighty. Anybody else? Alrighty. Well, I have a topic to bring up. I had a little project over the weekend. Speaking of, Barra, kid night type things. It was, a really nice thing that I ordered over Christmas. It was a GPS module and also a Bluetooth module. It happened to be for my Toughbook, but I think you'll find a lot of these things available for various computers. And it's a really fun thing to add to your laptop or maybe even your netbook if you have a non-GPS cellular-enabled netbook. You might want to just, go find one of these $20 USB pucks and connect it to your USB port, and have some fun with it. Boy, it is really, really neat. All sorts of free software out there to go play nav games with. There's all sorts of relatively expensive topo and street direction type stuff, so you can turn your netbook or notebook or even your desktop machine into a into a direction finding machine if you want. But it's a lot of fun. In this case, what I did was I installed a little board that was custom made for the CF29, which is a Panasonic Toughbook. You guys see me have it. I have a GPS in the factory in one of mine, but I bought another one not too long ago. Actually, I bought two and sold one to pay for the first one, actually. And let me drop it. And I found there was a place called custom-toughbooks.com. That's a guy in Norway who has a little board. And what was really cool was building the antenna. And I kid you not, I built the antenna with a pair of stubby needle-nose pliers, from like a mini Leatherman, and just bent up the copper to make like a little tray. And they give you a GPS antenna module that basically is it's the patch part of the patch antenna with a preamplifier built into it. And let me tell you, all I had to do was form the copper, glue the little amplified antenna probe to the right spot in the copper, slide it in, connect it to the rest of the interface, blah, blah, blah. And I had such a great performing GPS. I was really, really impressed with how fast it locked and how well it stayed locked. And I was comparing it to two or three other GPSs that had the same, shall we say, view of the world in their near proximity. They weren't physically on top of each other. They were maybe 8 inches or a foot apart each, but boy, were they just absolutely outstanding on this particular module. And I got to believe there's ways to integrate that with other computers as well. But it just got me thinking that there's a variety of GPS pucks out there that you might want to play GPS games. So if you're a rover and you want to know where you are, what your grid square is, you can easily determine that. If you just want to have some directions or you want to get some topology references, how high you are, things like that, you can do all that. It's great fun, and it's relatively inexpensive. It also kind of sets you up for APRS too, because then you can take the output of the serial port and into a TNC and start, wrapping away what your position is. It's something to think about, guys. You know, for APRS. In fact, we're going to be doing an APRS demo, I think, this weekend as part of this Bob Berninga, WB4APR, who invented it all, is going to be giving. Actually, he trained some midshipmen at the Naval Academy to work some APRS stuff. And so we're going to be doing that this weekend, and it should be great fun with that. So I'm just wondering if anyone has played with a GPS module of any kind, installed one, or even an external one to their computer, and what they had to say. Alrighty, well, that's interesting, I guess. Anybody, I know when we have our VHF contest efforts, people want to know what grid square they're in, and they're never quite sure. This is a way to gain some confidence in that, and, get a sure fix on your position. So that's another thing to think about as well. Let's see. I did an update also on the TYT radios. Some of you have seen these TYT radios that are selling for, from some of our local dealers for, let's say, $180 or so, maybe $200. I found a place, and I encourage you to look at this website with some caveats. I'll explain what they are in a minute, but there's a lot of high band, also maybe even some 220 and certainly 440 single and multi-band radios out there for prices that we're not quite accustomed. These are dual band radios with single receive, and the website is radioshop888.com. radioshop888.com, and the radio I have here, it costs $110 shipped, and I think some of these packages include a USB programming cable as part of that package, as well as the batteries or the antenna, etc. So it's really kind of fascinating as to how this is all evolving, and there's a lot of cheap Chinese gear out there that you can make good use of and get on the air with. So if you want, we're getting to the point of disposable VHF and UHF radios. Anyway, end of the first, by the way, doubles, zero, coyotes, two, unfortunately. Anyway, I think it's zero, zero, Rangers and Ottawa right now, just for those who care. Alrighty, anybody have any comments about these Chinese import radios? Anyone else looked at around at some of the sites? I encourage you to get your computers and do that. Radioshop888.com. It's a non-trivial thing, and very, very nice, good service. And I even think they take PayPal as a payment, which is even more exciting. There are a couple of manufacturer sites too, by the way, kicking around out there for some of these radios. They're certainly not type accepted for use in, the United States, but if you're buying them and you're putting them to your own private use, I don't see a problem with buying them and, using them responsibly in the amateur radio band. What's also nice is they also will receive FM broadcast, and so if you need just a radio to post to FM broadcast radio, that's kind of pleasant too. What they don't do, they will dual receive, but what they do is once one of the two channels becomes active, it doesn't hear the other channel. In other words, it basically blocks. It's not as much a dual receive as a dual channel scanning, and he who wins first. You can also scan your memories, but that's a different matter. So it's kind of a couple of different modes of operation. But the days of expensive, amateur radio on VHF, and UHF is kind of past. In fact, I was talking to NZ2K. He found one that will actually do 2 meters and 220 as well from another manufacturer. So it's out there, guys. I'll bet you there's a low-band one, too, as well. It's probably one that works on 4 meters, too, if we had that band, the 70 megahertz band. All righty. Anybody else with comments?
B2JEK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was on the 2-meter net last night, and Ben KF2ID mentioned that he tried. He was having a problem with his ICOM 7000 shutting down. And he swapped power supplies, and it turned out that there was the defective power supply. With his other power supply, the thing worked like a charm. So he's got some troubleshooting to do on his power supply. So just wanted to tell everybody what the situation was. So I know that he had brought it up here last week, so I thought it'd be interesting to pass that information on. Back to that, W2JDK.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I'm really, really glad to hear that. Thank you, Don. That's excellent news. Alrighty. Anybody else? Okay, I'll just leave you with this other one. If you get a monoband 2-meter radio, you can buy a 5-watt handy talkie with extended transmit, but, you know, we won't go there. For about $60, and if you and a UHF one also about $60. If you buy them in a 10-pack, they're like $54. or $57. I think I saw $57, and these are shipped prices. So that's for the monobanders. So think about that, guys, as to what you could do with that in a pinch. And yeah, they're soft programmable, and they're all programmable from a computer, and you can pretty much lock down the memories, put it in memory mode, and keep things relatively tight so that, you know, you don't get yourself in trouble. I think it's marvelous. I mean, you know, and I'm going to start looking around to see about mobile rigs along the same line. I think there's, some potential here for folks to have some interesting radios. And I think the next thing will be the software-defined radios on the other side of the equation, kind of driving those prices down, too. So, life goes on. It's really cool. Anybody else? KTBAR. Ready? Any other check-ins?
Back.
Station?
MS2K. Yeah, I did a Wikipedia search on capacitor, and one thing I had not realized, you can buy them commercially available capacitors from 100, I guess that's femtofarad, FF, to 5 kilofarad. I have a hard time imagining 5 kilofarad, but then again, it wasn't all that long ago that I had a hard time imagining a single farad until I could fit one on the end of my finger just a few years ago. NS2K.
Yeah, what was the voltage characteristic of that one farad finger-mounted capacitor, Jim?
5.5 volts. In that case, it was being used as a memory storage device before the days of flash memory, little serial flash thingies and so on. It was a way of keeping a circuit alive during battery change, we'll put it that way.
Oh, it's marvelous. Okay. Well, I think the first, shall we say, capacitor I ever saw in that range was a half farad capacitor, and it looked like a slightly anemic car battery in a steel case.
It's amazing how far we've come here with the so-called super caps, or I suppose there's several other trade names, but that whole family of device
it's you can get umpteen farad at fairly high voltage if you have enough money, and they're not even all that big.
Right, you no longer need a Sherpa to carry the stuff for you, or a lab assistant.
Yeah, assuming I'll make it to Fairlawn tomorrow night. Yeah, maybe we can continue the capacitor discussion a little bit. There, obviously, it's a very it's a discussion that could be carried on for several semesters.
Yes, there are all sorts of wonderful things you can do with capacitors. I mean, in fact, there are many interesting things you can do with a lot of what I'll call the basic components in their basic fundamental mode and availability. And it you can have a lot of fun just, you know, laboratory experiments for kid night. My favorite one, however, and by the way, children, do not do this at home. This is done by a trained professional, as they say in the media. You take a half farad capacitor, you tie it to a piece of number 12, you lower the half farad capacitor into a hole that has no one really nearby it. And then what you do is you plug the other end at an extreme distance, let's say maybe 100 or more feet away, into the outside, shall we say, conductors of a 240 Hubble, 50 amp Hubble connector. And the next thing you will note is that there is a large explosion followed by the vaporization of the of that half farad capacitor. You also may get a tremoring of the wire while it vibrates for a short period of time prior to the vaporization and dissemination of the capacitor. Just one other note, that's probably a good way in this day and age to get yourself put on to a law enforcement list with extremely prejudicial attention given to you. So I would, you know, strongly suggest that you not engage in those things. Okay. I've had a few situations where electrolytic capacitors have gone bad and exploded in my ham shack, and that has never, ever been a happy moment. When I was youthful, I had a lot of open frame type of power supplies, and the only problem with an open frame power supply is when something lets loose, it throws shrapnel around the ham shack, and it, you know, it's very unnerving to have this gunshot-like thing happen in your ham shack, but it's even more distasteful to A, have the smell of the now fully vaporized electrolytic capacitor around for a long period of time, not to mention finding pieces of it in all sorts of odd places and having to dodge it as it is spread around the room. I'm just wondering, has anyone else ever had that happen to them, or am I the only one who's ever had a capacitor fail in their presence?
To JK.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, my father had a power supply. I think it was for his hobby wells. It had a 450-volt capacitor that go in it. For some reason, I guess it was defective, and yeah, it was, fortunately, it was inside of a steel chassis. I think it was sitting down, but on the table, so the parts didn't go flying too far, but the stench went all over the place.
And how pleased was your mother about that?
Well, it was my father's radio, but it was down in the cellar, so it didn't really matter that much.
Oh, okay. So I had one let loose in my ham shack on the third floor of my parents' house, and the smell wafted down the stairs and all the way to the living room from the third floor, and my parents were very concerned, not to mention they came running when the sound went off. Alrighty. Any other capacitor failure stories?
I've had a couple.
No, not you.
One self-induced, where I had hooked up a power supply to an audio mixer backward. Anyway, the two large input capacitors spread their contents all over the inside of the chassis, made kind of a mess. The other one that occurred not in my presence, but I spent much of the rest of the day cleaning up, was a large mica capacitor, a tar-filled mica capacitor, and an AM broadcast transmitter disgorged its contents all over the inside of the cabinet. That was just tremendous fun cleaning up.
I guess you had to take it out of service to do that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tar and mica fragments. Oh, man. That's lovely. Well, that's what happened to me with my nickel metal hydride batteries. I overvoltaged them. I mean, if you're well-behaved, you take a 10-cell nickel metal hydride and, you know, absolutely do not put more than 13.8 on it, you can float it forever. It's fine. But if you get greedy and float 15 on it, it's going to heat up and it's going to explode. And, you know, in fact, Gene, WB2HID, asked me about the packs I used to have. You know, where could I get more, or could he get some? And I couldn't find the vendor, and I could no longer read the packaging because I had blown them up on two separate occasions. You know, it's like I didn't learn my lesson once. I had to learn it twice. Good Lord. And, in fact, somewhere around here, I have the case of one of the nickel metal hydride batteries cells sitting around here, just the outer case of one, because it, you know, shot off the body, off the core. And the core, which was largely carbon, you know, put black soot all sorts of places around my ham shack. I was collecting things in all sorts of interesting places, inside and outside radios and such. It was really annoying. Not to mention, there's a half-dollar sized hole in one spot, plus smaller holes in my sheetrock here in my ham shack as a unsubtle reminder of that occasion. So anyway, enough of that. Anybody else have any comments?
Into JK.
Hey, Doc.
And talking about capacitors earlier, I had mentioned the oil filled using castor oil in a capacitor in my father's, had that the spark transmitter, and every once in a while the thing would arc over, and at that point in time you'd have to wait for the bubble to float to the surface before he could resume transmitting.
Oh my. Alrighty, that's novel. Anyway. Anybody else? Well, oh well. Alrighty. Well, this has been fun. Any other comments and questions for the men?
I'm out.
I didn't realize we had somebody there. Alrighty. Very good. Well, we had a really fun time. Yesterday I was down in Annapolis. And I was going across US 50 on the Bay Bridge, a couple hundred feet above the water, and worked one of the New York repeaters for a couple of seconds as I went across the bridge. Very often I can work Howie, HWW, on, he's got an antenna and a repeater up on Westchester Apartments in New York. I can actually work his repeater too from that spot, and I did that yesterday around noontime, so that was kind of fun. I did it again in the evening, but no one came back in the evening. Sometimes on 5-2 I'll work someone all the way up here in New York, which is kind of fun on 5-2 as I float by, even in the dead of winter. Anyway, one thing I should have for you guys next ARA meeting is I will bring some HRO catalogs, because I'll have spares. I have one case, and I'll need a second case for the Radio Merit Badge class that we're doing down at the Naval Academy. I got a dozen midshipmen teaching it in two sessions, a morning class and an afternoon class. And one of the things that we give everybody who attends the class is we give them an HRO catalog, because we can. It doesn't cost us anything. Gives them something else to chew on and take home besides their paperwork. Gives them to drool over. So that's something to think about as well. Just want to bring one other thing to your attention. I saw the FTM-350R, which is a mobile rig. It's a dual-receive VHF-UHF mobile rig from Yaesu. And it's got two tuning knobs, two volume controls. It's very, very nice. It's got separate speakers for left and right. You can mix the audio. You can do all sorts of things. You can cross-band repeat. You can also buy a GPS module for it and do APRS right from the screen. And the other thing you can do with it, which I thought was kind of neat, is it only has a 1-watt capability, but it has a 1-watt capability on 220. And you can mix that into the crossband repeat operation. So I think that they're looking for people to, you know, have, you know, some crossband capability that also involves 220, and I think that's just marvelous. So take a look at that FTM-350R. I'm not a big Yaesu guy, but I did catch my eye, and NZ2K brought it to my attention. Really good, interesting radio. A lot of good functionality. I'm already hearing from a few people who have them that they actually work well. A lot of times the initial production of stuff doesn't work well for you, so it's good to see that. It's getting rave reviews so far. Alrighty, anybody else?
Question?
Yes, sir.
Has anybody been following the, we'll call it the upcoming ICOM IC9100? I know you have, Gordon.
Yeah, actually I have. How did you know?
Because you sent me something.
Well, that's true. Actually, I subscribe to the Yahoo list that Adam Forreston runs. It's pretty neat. 9100, why don't you describe it, Jim?
I don't know. It's sort of like a sub-600, except that it's also got 2 meters, 440, and optionally 1.2 gig, and optionally ICOM digital mode. It's, I suppose, an update of the 910, taking advantage of their recent update of the 756 Pro 3.
Yeah, the couple of things it doesn't have. Its spectrum scope, I don't think it's going to be as hot as a Pro 3, but we'll see. It's a little unclear to me on that point. but it's certainly a nice radio. And by the way, it also has HF. I think that's the thing that, in addition to going to the UHF and the microwave or low microwave, you know, get to the 1200 and 432 spectrum, it also, as you pointed out, HF, and that's kind of neat. I mean, I'm staring at my 746 Pro and saying to myself, well, am I going to change that? And I don't think so. but we'll see. You know, I never thought I'd own a Pro 3, and I do. And so I never say never, but yeah, I'm about to go into that wonderful cycle of serious high school fees again. And yeah, I bought my Pro 3 when I was on high school tuition hiatus, and so I'm not anticipating being able to afford a high-end radio like that for a while. But between that and the 7600, which I have used, by the way, I got to use it at HRO in Atlanta, which is really not in Atlanta, but north of there. You do notice certain things being slicker in the 7600, which is the other thing. But, boy, both those two new radios are quite a pair, to say the least. Jim, you want to make any more comments about it? Or, you know, what would you use the radio for?
Oh, if I were to buy one, it would be primarily for club use for VHF, UHF contesting, and then it would be my in shack VU machine, replacing the 706 that's currently in here. With this one, I can overload the front end fairly easily, where I would expect that would be much more difficult to overload. One of the other really cool things about it is I think this and the 7600 share the same characteristic in that they both have a fully functional USB connection. So to get both audio and control between the computer and the radio, it's just a USB cable. You don't need any other interface.
Yeah, and that's huge. So let's put that in layperson's terms. That means your Rig Blaster goes away, your 746 Pro goes away, your transverters go away. you know, that's a significant decluttering of the world. I don't know. I'm certainly interested. I like the way the 7600 behaved. Compared to the Pro 3, it's noticeable, but is it that noticeable? Yeah, under certain circumstances, it probably is. Is it enough to go from a $2,500 radio to a $3,800 radio? That's another question. We don't have a price for the 9100 yet, and there's a similar equation going there. You know, is ICOM driving up the price point? And you know, in the United States, the D-Star is an option. They may do that and drop the price. May be a lot less here in the States than it is in Japan, where they include the D-Star no matter what. So they may, should we say, option you out to death. Personally, I'd probably put the D-Star module in just so I have it, but only if D-Star was of interest to me and it wasn't my primary D-Star radio in the shack. I would use it as a second D-Star radio if I had to have. If I was going the D-Star route in the shack, it would be my second in-shack D-Star radio. That's how I would see it.
Yeah, it strikes me as being a pretty expensive radio to use for D-Star. But yeah, if that's your way of getting into it, that would be good.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not it's not doing the data mode. It's only doing the voice mode. I think I saw.
Yeah, it doesn't do the, what is it, 120 kbit, whatever the data mode, right?
And that was a huge disappointment. You know, if they're trying to get you to buy a Cadillac radio, then they have to put Cadillac elements into every element of the functionality, and they probably made a design decision not to do that, figuring that you can get along with the narrower, you know, lower bit rate data, which is probably true in some cases, but wouldn't be my preference to say the least. Anyway, so let's see, what else? Has anyone else looked at these radios or other radios that kind of sparked their interest in along the same family line, either the 9100 or the 7600, you know, type things? I'll just point out that the 9100 is positioned to be a TS-2000 killer, but the story is, and again, there are no North American prices announced at this point, you know, it has to be price competitive in order to play that game. Now, ICOM's had a history of being a little more expensive than Kenwood, and a ton more expensive than Yaesu, so... you know, we'll see. We will see. Let's put it this way. I think my Dynamic Microwave Transverter is secure in its position in my shack. For now, anyway. Well, if no one has anything else, so we can wrap it up. Does anybody have any other questions, comments? Just idle chatter they want to contribute to the game? Just a reminder, there's a test session on Friday night, and it is at Westwood High School. And Don, it's at 7 o'clock this Friday night, tomorrow night.
That's a roger, W2JEK.
Okay, and just as a reminder, two forms of ID. If you're coming to get a new ham license and you need to have your social security number in your head at least, and bring $15. And if you're going to upgrade, you have to bring a copy and your original license, as well as another form of ID and $15. So do keep that in mind if you're upgrading. So it's going to be awesome, awesome, awesome. I want to thank everybody for a nice night. Anybody have any last comments? Alrighty. Well, maybe we'll see you guys in the NAQP on Saturday afternoon late. We'll probably be on 40 with an Envis antenna, so do look for us. It'll be really, really nice. And we look forward to working y'all this weekend and doing some really nice demonstrations through the late afternoon, evening in particular, but afternoon certainly during the NAQP. So, on that happy note, I would like to thank everybody for checking in tonight, and wish everybody a happy Columbus, you know, European imperialist takeover by Western Europe of North and South America type holiday. It's a grand thing, by the way. Think about, ask someone what the Caribbean islands, was it the Carib Indians, you know, what they did as part of their practices. Ask, you know, talk about the savagery savagery of the Spanish conquistadors. You know what? They're sweetie pies compared to the Carib Indians who they conquered. Just thinking out loud here, boys. So it's okay. 7-3, have a great one. Pray for the folks in Haiti, and please contact, you know, your favorite charity, whether it's the Red Cross, Save the Children, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, whatever works for you. Doctors Without Borders, just find somebody who will take your money and get it to help those poor people down there. Just make a small contribution to somebody. And help maybe change a life, because they've probably lost a few down there in Haiti. So Godspeed and take care. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, returning the repeater to normal amateur radio use and asking the, or thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. Godspeed.